at the dismantled unit. There's a 100 light-day gap in Starfleet's early warning net. The other buoys can compensate somewhat, but the loss in acuity is noticeable. We need to solve why this happened. He frowned, and his antennae arched forward. The last thing we need is something, sneaking through a hole in the fence.
Burnham's eyes narrowed. Sir, do you suspect the Tholians?
I never suspect anything, Lieutenant, he pointed out. I make predictions and educated tactical evaluations. Have you ever seen one of their ships?
She shook her head. Just simulations.
As Chitalo spoke, he started to pace. They're fast, agile, extremely dangerous. We'd have our work cut out for us. Then he shook off the grim thought and studied her anew. The quicker this is done, the better it will be. And I imagine you would prefer to have the analysis completed before Lieutenant Saru returns from the rescue mission.
Sir?
Burnham had an uncomfortable feeling about where this conversation was going. The First Officer and Saru had never really gotten along, not in all the time that Burnham had been serving on board the Shenzhou. The Kelpian's stiff manner didn't mesh well with the Andorian's own brand of martial discipline, while, conversely, Burnham had always felt that Chitalo's cool restraint was admirable. Almost Vulcan, in its way, a rare sentiment, considering that the people of Andoria and of Burnham's adoptive homeworld were once bitter enemies at opposite ends of the emotional spectrum.
I know you beamed the buoy on board over Saru's objections, he went on. Therefore, you are invested in proving that was the right decision. For the record, I agree with you, Lieutenant. Perhaps this will go some way toward convincing our Kelpian crewmate that his default conservative take on every situation isn't always the most practical approach.
Burnham gave a nod, but still, she felt a little bad for Saru. For all his experience, she couldn't shake the feeling that he was in over his head on board the alien ship, and that realization would not be easy for him. Saru had an ego that often expressed itself in an impulse to try too hard, and getting shut down by the Pleiars and his senior officers over his conduct would smart.
You are wondering how you would have handled things over there had Captain Georgiou sent you instead of Saru.
Chitalo's penetrating, ice-cold gaze met hers, and Burnham gave nothing away. The First Officer had an uncanny knack of seeing right into the thought process of his juniors.
Would I have dealt with it differently?
She considered the question as she examined the reader array. I would have gone looking, too. As a science officer, Saru was a generalist, but Burnham's specialty was the study of alien cultures, and the chance to peel back the layers on a little-known society like the Gorlands was an enticing prospect. She said as much to the commander.
We can reach out to them. This situation could offer us a greater insight into the Gorland race, even on a basic level.
The First Officer paused.
I've heard they have a strong warrior spirit. It would be interesting to know more.
His gaze shifted to the analysis rig.
But, one step at a time.
Then Chitalo pointed at a dark band of crimson unfolding on the display.
Correct me if I am wrong, Lieutenant, but that does not appear to be a positive result.
Oh, no.
Burnham leaned into the readout and her heart sank. The reader showed the content of the duotronic core as a mass of corrupted files, millions of fragmented shards of data in complete disarray.
That should not be possible.
The memory banks are triple-shielded, hardened against solar flares and transient subspace phenomena.
It may only be this single core.
I don't think I am that lucky, Burnham said with a sigh.
She pointed at the display.
Look at the pattern of corruption, sir. It's asymmetrical, like a localized effect centralized on a point right here.
Estimating the scope of the pattern, she realized that the damage would be spread not just through this core, but across the entire memory bank. The commander folded his arms across his chest.
Are you telling me this was done deliberately?
Burnham took a breath and hesitated. Suddenly she wished that Saru were here with her. Just to have the Kelpian looking over her shoulder and double-checking her work would have helped. Then, at length, she nodded. I will need to run diagnostics on all of the duotronic cores to be certain, but that would be my preliminary conclusion, sir. She gestured at the screen. The collimation of the effect is just too regular to be the result of a natural phenomenon.
Theorize, said Chithalo,
making it an order.
How could it be done?
Her mind raced as she considered and disregarded a handful of possibilities in short order. A coherent energy beam sent from long range, something attuned to the correct frequency, could do this. But it would need to penetrate the monitor buoy's deflectors. If it was... She stopped herself from saying, the Tholians. If it was the influence of a hostile actor, why would they not just destroy the unit and be done with it?
That question is the one you're going to answer for us, said the first officer. If we can't figure out what happened here, the next thing to go silent could be the Shenzhou.
4. Hatch secured, Wheaton reported from the pilot's chair. Ready to disengage.
Understood.
Lieutenant Commander Johar's voice cut through the air in the cabin, but Saru was only half listening. He was too busy trying not to stare at the Gorlan interpreter sitting across from him.
Tell the captain we'll be finishing up soon over here, Britch. By the time you come back, we should be almost done.
Affirmative, replied the ensign. Shuttle Yang cutting loose, now. A dull thud echoed through the hull, and the small auxiliary craft floated away from the hull of the massive Pelear transport. Lines of light cast through the windows shifted as they oriented around toward the Shenzhou drifting nearby. The Gorlan drew himself up onto the seat to get a better look at the Federation starship as they crossed the distance. He had introduced himself as Vetch, speaking a halting, broken version of a basic Pelear Zell dialect that Saru's universal translator could parse. At first, he seemed disturbed by the idea of leaving the cargo ship to visit the Shenzhou, but now that he was looking at the Starfleet vessel, he appeared resigned to it. Saru concentrated on the Gorlan, trying to feel the boundaries of the alien's electrosensitive aura, but it was feeble, deliberately muted. Vetch held himself up with three of his hands, the fourth pressed to the transparent aluminum of the viewport. He was muttering something, too quietly to be heard over the hum of the shuttle's impulse engines. Saru considered him. Like many of the other Gorlans he had seen in the cargo module, Vetch was dressed in shabby, hand-spun clothes in a dusty red-orange hue. His hair was long and streaked with gray, matching a salt-and-pepper beard coiled into crude braids, and he wore two ribbons of soiled green cloth around the biceps of his upper right arm. Saru noticed that the interpreter, the speaker, as he had been introduced, walked with a slight limp, and he thought of the female in the white robes. Saru's curiosity about her rolled around in his thoughts, but he held off asking any questions. Now was not the time. At Vetch's side, the Pelear woman named Hekan sat quietly, her gaze turned inward. From the skills and status she exhibited, Saru hypothesized that Hekan served in a combination role, equivalent to that of an executive officer and chief engineer, and the deference the other Pelear crew members gave her seemed to bear that out. She was accompanied by one of them now, a male in an orange jumpsuit with a silver vest affair over his chest. Judging by the hawkish manner displayed by the other Pelear, Saru believed that he was a security officer of some kind, although he carried no visible weapons. Still, the crewman's presence spoke volumes about Commander Nathal's trust level where the Shenzhou was concerned. She was no longer making herself available to talk to any of the Starfleet team, and it fell to Hekan to explain that away. Saru guessed Nathal's unwillingness to continue a dialogue was more about personal dislike than it was anything related to her duties, despite claims to the contrary.
Many?
Vetch looked down at Hekan to ask the question, nodding in the direction of the Shenzhou as the ship grew larger. Hekan glanced at Saru.
The Federation's Starfleet is quite large, is it not?
Yes.
Saru nodded and looked to Vetch.
Many indeed. The Shenzhou is an older craft, but it is only one vessel in a fleet that operates across several sectors.
More come here?
Saru wasn't sure what the question was leading toward. If they are needed. Vetch pursed his lips and said nothing. Wheaton brought them around and into the starship's open hangar bay in a smooth, gentle turn, and the ensign deftly dropped the Yang back into the very same spot it had left several hours before. As the shuttle settled to the deck, Saru saw three figures waiting on the flight apron: Captain Georgiou, Lieutenant Burnham, and the captain's yeoman, Ensign Danby Connor. Inwardly, he winced. Saru's actions aboard the Pelear ship had crossed a line of due comportment that would earn him censure from his commander, but it would be worse if he was forced to suffer it in front of Burnham and Connor. He shook off the thought. If the captain was going to give him a dressing down, it wouldn't be now.
No, he thought, that is something I will have to look forward to.
The Yang's aft hatch dropped open, and Saru led the way, followed in order by the Pelear security guard, Hekan, Vetch, and finally Ensign Wheaton. Georgiou caught Saru's eye as he drew himself up to attention, and he knew his earlier thoughts were correct.
At least the first officer isn't present.
Saru doubted that Commander Chithalo would be discreet about pointing out his shortcomings. Captain Georgiou gave Vetch an official greeting in line with his status as the representative of the Gorlan, but he appeared distracted, warily peering into the far corners of the cavernous landing bay, as if looking for something.
"I asked for you to be brought here because I have some questions," Georgiou went on. "I wanted to converse with you face to face, and please understand, you are under no duress here. You may speak freely and make any request you require."
Saru was aware of Hekan and the other Pelear shifting nervously as the captain concluded her opening statement. If there was a moment for this to all become even more complicated, then it was now. The Kelpian ran through possible scenarios in his head.
What if he asks for asylum? What if there is violence? What if someone produces a weapon?
It was a fact of life for Saru that he entertained such worst-case scenarios every minute of every day. He glanced at Burnham, recalling something she had said to him a few months ago.
"You always expect the worst, Saru." "Yes," he had replied, "but I always hope for the best."
"Ask what is to be asked,"
said Vetch, making a beckoning motion.
"We'll reply."
Georgiou exchanged glances with Burnham and Connor, then returned her attention to the speaker.
"Are the Gorlans aboard the transport vessel in any distress?"
"Distress?"
Vetch's face wrinkled.
Is anything hurting your people?"
offered Saru. From the corner of his eye, he saw that Connor was discreetly conducting a tricorder scan of the group.
"Gorlan kind are hardy, spirited," replied Vetch. "Little hurts us. We endure."
"She wants to know if we have harmed you," said Hekan, shooting Georgiou a look. "That's it, isn't it? You're afraid we've enslaved these people, or something equally heinous? You just don't want to say it out loud."
"We're looking for some clarity," offered Burnham. "That's all."
"You're judging us," Hekan shot back. "And them, on a matter you know next to nothing about."
She made a terse negative gesture at her throat.
"Does the Federation think so little of Pelear Zell's people? I swear to you, on Beta's lands, I would not be party to such a thing."
Hekan spoke with honesty and passion, enough that Saru was willing to believe her. But she was only one person, he reminded himself, and the Kelpian wondered how Nathal would have responded in her place. Vetch's head bobbed.
Paliar kind have not harmed Gorlan kind. All is calm between us on the journey to the new place. Have no concern for us.
Pardon me? Connor cleared his throat. Sorry, I couldn't help but notice. The scans. He held up the tricorder. I'm detecting below-average biometrics compared to the Gorlan norms we have on record, although admittedly those are pretty vague.
Ah.
Vetch ran a hand down his beard.
Is nothing. Only fatigue caused by extended travel. Affects all of us, but it is inconsequential. We do not speak of minor thing.
He frowned.
Gorlan kind do not live at their best under metal skies, he admitted, pointing at the ceiling above them. We need earth beneath feet, true air in breath.
Are you talking about a vitamin deficiency? Said Burnham.
That's about right, agreed Connor. Noticeable, but not life-threatening.
We can help with that, said the captain, seeing an opportunity. My chief medical officer, Dr. Nambu, can offer the Gorlans a medicine that will alleviate your fatigue, if you wish it.
That would be of use,
said Vetch, and the air of bluff inscrutability he affected dropped away, revealing genuine appreciation. But still, his eyes darted, watching the angles, and Saru realized he was seeing another emotion in the alien. The fear again, the same fear Saru had sensed back in the gathering space. He let his other senses lessen and concentrated again on the aura field of the Gorlan. Vetch was agitated, but he concealed it well. We are glad to assist, Georgiou was saying. That's why we are out here. But Hekan had more to say.
I believe you have good intentions, she began. However, I must tell you that my commander considers your presence in this sector to be more interference than assistance. This space is beyond the boundary of your federation. You cannot enforce your values here.
Saru had the immediate sense that the words Hekan was speaking were really Nathal's.
Would you prefer that we left you all to perish?
What my lieutenant means, interjected Georgiou, is that Starfleet has a duty to protect all life. That goes beyond lines on a map.
And I thank you.
Hekan gave a small bow.
But I have my orders, and I must relay a message.
She stiffened, and her manner became formal.
Commander Nathal will be filing an official complaint with the Federation Diplomatic Corps over the Shenzhou's conduct in this situation. Now that your demand to meet the Gorlans has been fulfilled, she asks that you withdraw your crew members from our ship and leave us to our mission.
The captain glanced at Saru and Wheaton. Are the repairs complete?
Almost done, Captain, replied the ensign.
We will respect the wishes of our Paliar neighbors.
Georgiou nodded.
My chief engineer will certify your warp drives are safe to operate.
Hekan opened her mouth to protest, but the captain continued on.
It's the very least we can do for prospective members of the United Federation of Planets.
At length, the Paliar woman made the affirmative gesture at her throat and relented.
Of course.
Yeoman? Georgiou looked to Connor.
Escort our guests to sickbay and see that Speaker Vetch is provided with medicines from ship's stocks.
Aye, Captain.
Connor stepped forward to meet the group and gestured toward the turbo lift across the shuttle bay.
If you'll follow me, sir.
Saru watched Vetch and the Paliars walk away, noting that the Gorlan moved slowly and carefully, as if he were unused to the gravity level on board the starship. When Saru turned back, he found the captain's hard look boring right at him.
I know I have a reputation for giving my people a lot of leeway, she began, holding Saru's gaze. Is that a mistake on my part?
The Kelpian squirmed a little, and she let it happen.
No, Captain. I admit I allowed my interest to get the better of me. He sighed, and Giorgio knew he was already beating himself up about it. I couldn't ignore what I saw, concluded Saru.
Sure made things a lot more complicated, muttered Wheaton, and then he caught himself.
Did I say that out loud?
Lieutenant Burnham was right, she went on, letting the ensign's comment pass.
Clarity is what we need here. Despite your methods, Saru, it's important that we learned about the presence of the Gorlands on that ship and their circumstances.
Given their attitude toward us, I very much doubt Commander Nathal would have freely volunteered that information, noted Saru.
Is she hiding something else?
As ever, Michael was first to cut to the core of things. Or is this just resentment directed toward us as outsiders?
Burnham cocked her head in that Vulcan way of hers as she analyzed her own questions.
Uncertain, Saru said ruefully. Then he took a step forward and lowered his voice.
However, Captain, I do feel that there is more to this than we know. The speaker, Vetch?
He jutted his chin in the direction of the turbolift.
Who was it that provided him for us to converse with?
The Paliars, said Wheaton.
You don't trust him? Said Burnham. What are you basing that on?
Instinct.
As soon as he said the word, Giorgio saw the Kelpian's shoulders slump.
I know. It's hardly the most solid basis for scientific scrutiny.
Wheaton?
She shifted her attention to the junior officer.
You were over there too? Do you share Lieutenant Saru's opinion?
The ensign frowned. Nathal doesn't like us, and she doesn't want us around. That's as plain as the noses on her face. But I mean, we might feel the same way if things were reversed, right?
Commander Nathal could perceive our intervention as a threat to her authority, said Burnham, mirroring Wheaton's frown.
Admittedly, it's an illogical reaction.
Not everyone is as rational as you, Michael, said Giorgio, letting some mild reproach into her tone.
Are we going to just let them leave?
Saru fixed her with those searching eyes of his. We can't do that. There are too many unanswered questions.
The captain saw a look pass between Wheaton and Burnham. The other officers were thinking the same thing she was.
Giorgio had rarely seen Saru push the point as he was doing now. It was out of character for the Kelpian to react in this fashion.
Lieutenant, that's all we can do. We don't have a right or due cause to restrict the passage of a Paliar Zell starship. Frankly, I've already overstepped my remit by sending the rescue team in blind. We can't risk causing an interstellar incident by involving ourselves in the affairs of non-Federation worlds.
This isn't a prime directive issue, Captain, Saru insisted, his tone rising.
I know the regulations, she said firmly, shutting him down. And that's why we're going to abide by them.
There's also another danger to consider, offered Burnham.
The Tholian Assembly is an ever-present threat to the Paliars. Commander Nathal and her crew have to deal with that potentiality every day. An increased Starfleet presence in this area, even one ship, risks an escalation of Tholian involvement.
They want us gone, said Wheaton, echoing his earlier statement.
And we're going to oblige. Let's not forget we have a mission of our own to get back to.
Giorgio nodded toward the Yang.
Be ready for immediate departure, Ensign. Let's not outstay our welcome any more than we already have.
She turned away and threw Burnham a glance.
I'll be on the bridge. In the meantime, Michael, bring Saru up to speed on the buoy situation.
The captain's last look was toward the Kelpian, but Saru was staring out and away through the shimmering force field over the open shuttle bay door toward the massive alien freighter floating beyond.
The buoy, began Burnham.
I've uploaded the data from the preliminary teardown into your queue. Saru nodded, but it was difficult for him to focus on the thought of the analysis. His mind kept drifting back to the face of the Gorlan female in the white robes. There was something compelling about her, and he felt a growing sense of incompleteness at the prospect of never learning what she might have said to him. The memory cores were affected by an outside energy source, Burnham went on. I'm not sure of the origin, but we have to consider that the Tholians may be behind it. Saru nodded absently. They have been known to interfere with attempts to scan their domains in the past. They utilize radiation baffles to conceal sections of their ships from close-range sensor sweeps. He watched Wheaton through the open hatch of the shuttle as the ensign ran the Yang through a pre-launch checklist. That's a passive measure. We're talking about an active one, a deliberate denial operation. Her lips thinned, and Burnham moved to step in front of him, blocking his view. Saru, do I have your full attention? Not really, he confessed. Perhaps a third of it? What's going on? Burnham looked him over. This morning you were fixed on the idea of running the analysis by the book from start to finish. Now you're barely listening to me. Her tone softened. What happened to you over there? What did you see? I don't have a good answer for that question, he admitted. For the most part, Saru was a stickler for process and protocol, a firm believer in scientific rigor. But there was also a side of him that was pure Kelpian, a throwback to the reactive, primitive nature of the prey species his kind had once been. That conflict was pressing on him, the responsive elements versus the rational, both trying to make sense of the emotions that his venture into the Gorlan gathering had brought up. I believe this situation has affected me more deeply than I was aware of. Do you need to see Dr. Nambu? He waved the comment away irritably. I am not unwell, Lieutenant. I am disquieted. Saru saw the questions in her expression. You don't understand, but you would, if you had been there. Maybe, she allowed. Perhaps then you would be the one asking me if I was okay. I think the captain is wrong to disengage from this situation. Normally, Saru would think twice about voicing such a comment, but it fell from him and he didn't try to walk it back. You made that clear enough, said Burnham. But there are regulations that have to be followed. Captain Giorgio knows that, and it appears that Commander Nathal has read the same rulebook. He eyed her. You talk about following the letter of the regulations, but that isn't what you said in the mess hall. You ignored protocol by having the buoy beamed aboard the ship. That was different, she replied. How so? You advocate following the regulations in one case, but not another? It seems very arbitrary to me. They were falling into their familiar combative rhythm once more, but Saru didn't care to halt it. At times he felt he understood Michael Burnham best when they were disagreeing. We're trained to interpret a situation based on the unfolding circumstances, Burnham shot back. This is the frontier, Saru. The nearest starbase is days away at high warp. The same for the closest Starfleet vessel. We have to be ready to bend the regulations if the moment demands it. That's the thing that separates a good officer from a great one, knowing when to bend and when to be firm. She cocked her head. If you want to command a starship one day, you need to learn when to make those calls, when to show boldness and when to use restraint. A retort was forming in his mind when something in Saru made him halt. The human had a point, as irritating as it might have been to admit it. Perhaps I should consider things from her viewpoint, he thought. What would Burnham do if our situations were reversed? You appear to have things in hand with the monitor analysis, Lieutenant. He pulled the tricorder from his belt and moved off. I'm happy to follow your lead. You are? Burnham raised an eyebrow. Yes,
he said distractedly, spooling through the tricorder's memory files for the data recorded by his universal translator. Carry on. I want to review these scans and upload them to the Shenzhou's computer. A plan of action was starting to form in his thoughts, each element building on the next.
That's it, sir, said Yashe as she pulled a hand across her brow. I think we're all good.
Johar didn't say anything, instead making a give-it-here gesture. The chief petty officer handed him the data tablet she had been using, and he tabbed through the display, holding up the device so he could look at it and the Pelear warp core side by side. On the portable screen, green status flags illuminated in a line to signify that all the systems inside the alien machinery were now operating normally. The repairs were complete, and they were ready to give the word to Nathal up on the command deck to begin the cold start sequence that would spin up the big cargo ship's warp nacelles. But Johar hesitated.
Did Subin report back to you about the pulse wake scan I wanted?
Yashe nodded, blinking her long-lashed eyes.
She ran the check, sir. No detection of any lingering nadion particles in any of the emitter coils or injector mechanisms. Whatever caused the pulse effect they encountered, there's no trace of it now.
Yes, he agreed. And that annoys the hell out of me.
Johar waved at the warp core.
I mean, we know it wasn't a transient subspace effect they passed through. That would have left a different decay signature. We know it wasn't an imbalance in the warp field. Again, that would have been obvious.
The engineers started to pace.
So what made this happen? I want a conclusive answer, mister. Otherwise, we're leaving the job half done, and you know how I feel about sloppy workmanship.
Sir?
Yashe broke in, but Johar kept speaking.
They rev up to warp speed and that nadion pulse reoccurs. The next time it could cause a supercritical failure. It might invert the Cochrane bubble or worse. Makes my skin crawl just thinking about it. We need to know for sure if this was a random anomaly, a systemic glitch, deliberate sabotage, or...
Sir, Yashe repeated, this time with force, at the same time inclining her head in the direction of the hatchway across the compartment.
Company is coming.
Johar turned to find Nathal advancing toward him as if she meant to start a fight, with Raiden, the senior Pelear engineer, rushing to keep up with her.
Commander,
he began, unconsciously hiding the data tablet behind his back.
Here you are. I was just about to contact you.
You have worn out whatever small measure of welcome you had on my ship, human, she began. Her tone was ice cold. I've tolerated you for long enough.
I was out of line before, Johar said apologetically. I am very sorry. Heat of the moment and all that.
He looked to Raiden for some shared understanding.
You know how it can be. Engineers are overly candid at times, and...
Insolent? Offered Nathal. Disrespectful?
That's fair.
He swallowed hard.
In our fleet, you would be broken down to the rank of deckhand for talking to a superior officer in such a way.
Nathal glared up at the warp core.
Raiden informs me the drives are fully repaired. It's time for you to go back to your own vessel.
That is sort of true, Johar replied. But the work isn't finished.
Again he looked to the Pelear engineer for support.
Did Mr. Raiden also tell you that we don't have a definitive cause for the nadion pulse that crippled your ship and destroyed the escort drone?
The malfunction has been corrected. Raiden said firmly.
No, the damage has been fixed, said Johar, and he felt his deferential manner starting to slip again. That's not the same thing.
He took a chance and pressed on before he lost control of the situation.
We're currently running a final diagnostic protocol on your warp subsystems. Isn't that correct, Chief Yashe?
He handed back the tablet to the Vaksha and gave her a hard look.
Yes, we are,
Yashe agreed smoothly,
and stepped away before anyone could see that she hadn't actually started any such diagnostic.
I'll go check on it right now.
Nathal came right up to Johar, and her voice dropped to a low growl.
If I believe that you are making an attempt at subterfuge, it won't matter if you are an engineer, or Starfleet, or Federation. I'll have you put out of an airlock, and Captain Georgiou can fish you from the void. Is that statement candid enough?
Very much so, managed Johar.
Captain?
The Pelear captain stalked away, with her engineer following closely at her heels. As soon as she was out of earshot, Johar sought out Yeshe, who stood with Subin at one of the control podiums.
Where's Zoxum?
He looked around. There was no sign of the Xano nurse.
He's on the tier above, explained Subin. Apparently a few of the Pelear technicians took a low dose of Delta rays during the incident. He's handing out shots to everyone who was affected.
Get him back down here when he's done, Johar told them. I don't want any of our people out of my sight.
Then he tapped the data tablet in Yashay's hand.
And get that diagnostic completed. Quickly!
There was an unattended workstation in an alcove off the Shenzhou's landing bay, and Saru secreted himself there out of sight where he could work at a console and keep one eye on the shuttlecraft on the launch cradle. He loaded the contents of his Universal Translator's memory into the ship's computer via his tricorder and called up a linguistic program to evaluate the dialogue he had recorded while among the Gorlands. Saru was convinced there was more nuance to mine from the data, if only he could find a way to frame it. These were, after all, complex beings with their own spacefaring culture, not some primitive semi-sentience with little concept of the larger universe, even if that was how some of the Pelears appeared to think of them. He didn't trust Vetch. Something about the speaker made his threat ganglia itch. Saru was certain if he could just converse with the Gorlands on the same level, all the questions and the uncertainties Captain Georgiou was being forced to overlook would snap into hard focus. They would know for sure what was happening on board the transport ship. Leaving that question hanging made Saru despair. He imagined the Gorlands facing some terrible fate and felt a sting of guilt. He could not stand by and allow those beings to go to an uncertain future, not if there was still a chance to prevent it. "This is not a time for restraint," he said aloud, recalling Burnham's comment as he worked through the data. This is a time for boldness. Saru reviewed the tapes, observing how the translator's learning software assembled and reassembled the syntax and sounds it recorded into something approximating linguistic communication. Anxiety, waiting, conflict. Basic concepts like these were decoded quickly, but the deeper streams of meaning were harder to reveal. Fear. Curiosity, anger, panic, distress. He closed his eyes and struggled to recall how he had felt, reaching back to the feel of the air about him, the subsensory crackle of the electrostatic fields generated by the press of the gathered Gorlands. Anger, suspicion, doubt.
It's not enough, he told himself, shaking his head.
Saru brought up visual representations of word clusters and clouds of possible meaning, watching as the ship's computer offered up conflicting potentials.
This alignment of sounds here could mean friendship or group, but it could also be temperature or sustenance.
The Kelpians scowled at the readouts.
This one here equates to either the size of a living creature or the age of an inanimate object.
Either one of the translations could be correct, he realized, their context modified by location, tone of voice, or the invisible pattern of a neuroelectric field. Toward the end of the recorded data, he noted that a single phrasing was repeated several times by many different Gorlan voices. Saru zeroed in on it and highlighted the word cluster. Computer, concentrate on this particular grouping. Based on all available data, theorize as to the most likely meaning.
Working, said the synthetic voice.
Unhelpfully, the display erupted with a dozen different potential answers.
In descending order, writing implement, doorway, carrier, mother, liquid, grouping, central, heart organ, nexus.
Stop. Saru waved the computer into silence. None of those are correct. There's something more, something missing. His brow furrowed as he struggled to remember what he had sensed when those words had been spoken. How had they made him feel? That's close, but it's not central, not a nexus, a... He could feel the concept was almost within his grasp, if only he could visualize it. And then suddenly he understood.
Hub. That's the term.
A figurative central point to which all others connect. The Gorlands were talking about a hub. Saru experienced a rush of excitement at the discovery, an instant of pure enthusiasm as a piece of the alien puzzle locked into place. But was this a literal idea, or something more symbolic? Again, he thought of the female in the grubby white robes and the open curiosity in her eyes when she had seen him. Was he seeing in her what he wanted to see, projecting his own feelings onto an alien being? Or was she what he thought she might be, someone who was willing to communicate outside the boundaries of Pelear oversight? Contact with other life forms and other cultures was always fraught with the possibility of critical misapprehension, of imposing one's ingrained prejudices on outsiders. The only way to comprehend was to attempt to bridge that gap, and if the Shenzhou left now, Saru would be tormented by the possibility of what had gone unsaid. He looked out at the shuttle, seeing Ensign Connor returning with Hekan, Vetch, and the other Pelear crewmen trailing behind carrying medical pods. Saru drew himself up and strode purposefully back across the landing bay, smoothly intercepting Connor as the captain's yeoman gave the aliens a formal send-off. On behalf of Captain Philippa Georgiou and the crew of the Shenzhou, Connor was saying, it was our pleasure to host you aboard our ship, and we hope that the Federation can continue to maintain cordial relations with the peoples of Gorlan and Pelear Zell.
Indeed, said Saru, interposing himself in the conversation. I'll take it from here, Mr. Connor.
Sir? The yeoman was going to protest, so Saru cut him off swiftly.
You're dismissed.
He made an after-you gesture to the group of visitors, directing them back aboard the Yang.
Allow me to help.
Saru took the medical containers and carried them the rest of the way into the shuttle, securing the hatch behind him as he boarded last. Up in the cockpit, Ensign Wheaton was talking to the hangar operations officer.
Shenzhou, this is Shuttle Yang. Passengers are secure. We are good to go.
We read you, Yang. Cleared for launch.
Thank you.
Wheaton trailed off as Saru climbed into the co-pilot seat next to him and ran a hand over the controls.
Lieutenant? You're coming back with us?
That's right. Saru said it firmly, as if the answer to the question was obvious.
I will assist Lieutenant Commander Johar with a final check on the repairs before we return with the rescue team.
Wheaton hesitated, and Saru pressed on, pulling rank.
In your own time, Ensign.
He nodded at the open launch bay ahead of him.
Aye, sir, Wheaton replied warily, and with a slight bump, the shuttle lifted off.
Is this really necessary, sir?
Said Zoxum, his face creasing in a frown.
I'm sure there won't be any physical danger to any of us.
You didn't see the look in her eye, muttered Johar, glancing up at the hatch as the Yang made a hard seal with the Pelear ship's hull.
I know you think the best of people, nurse, but I'll be more comfortable with you waiting in the shuttle.
As you wish, sir, Zoxum sighed. But you should know, not all the crew are as prickly as Commander Nathal. Some of them are very personable, in fact.
I'll keep that in mind, said Johar.
Back in the engine chamber, he had seen two of Nathal's crewmen, both of them wearing the silver vests that seemed to designate security officers. Neither of the Pelears had spoken to him, but it was abundantly clear they were there to keep watch over the warp core. Above, the hatch slid back into the ceiling and a ladder dropped down. Hekan was the first to come through, and she gave Johar a loaded look that seemed half sympathy and half irritation.
We talked to your captain, she told him. Vetch explained things to her.
Johar watched the diminutive, four-armed Gorlan scramble easily down the ladder and slide to the deck.
Did he? And what was that?
We are all going our separate ways, Hekan replied neutrally, as her crewmen emerged from the shuttle and stood aside.
My technicians, Subin and Yashay, they're almost done.
Johar decided to play a hunch and made one last attempt to get his point across.
But look, I have to say this, as one engineer to another. The origin of the pulse effect still isn't clear. With some more time, if we can work together.
I have my orders, and so do you.
Hekan cut him off in mid-sentence.
Don't make me say it again.
She didn't seem happy about it, but she walked away before he could press the point.
Stand by below. Cargo coming down, said another voice.
Johar turned to see Saru's gangly form descending the ladder, with two medical pods balanced awkwardly across his arms. As his hoofed boots hit the deck, Vetch reached up and took one of the containers, feeling the weight.
What are you doing back here?
Johar took a step closer to the Kelpian.
I didn't request you.
I'm here to assist, Saru offered. The captain provided the Gorlans with some supplies they requested. Something in the science officer's reply rang a wrong note with the chief engineer, but he held off on it, glancing back at the Xano nurse.
Zoxum, get in the shuttle and tell Wheaton to be ready to undock.
Meanwhile, Saru was already stepping after Vetch along the corridor, carrying the second medical pod with him.
Lieutenant!
Johar caught up to him.
You drop that stuff off with the Gorlans and you get back up here on the double. Is that clear? Don't stop to smell the roses.
The Gorlans grow fungus, sir, not flowers. But I will act with alacrity, he replied, stepping into the cradle of an elevator platform that would descend into the main cargo module.
As the lift fell away, Johar heard Zoxum calling out to him from the hatchway.
Sir, is Saru there?
He's gone below.
The engineer walked back toward the hatch.
Why?
Zoxum made a guttural noise that Johar knew was a Xano curse word, and threw a wary look toward the two Pelear security guards.
Better if we talk in the shuttle, sir.
What now?
Johar grimaced and hauled himself up the ladder, emerging in the Yang's crew cabin. Wheaton was waiting for him, and he jerked a thumb at the shuttle's control console. As soon as we docked, I re-established the line-of-sight laser comms with the Shenzhou. The XO wants to talk to you. Johar dropped into the pilot's chair and saw Commander Chethalo's face on a small holoscreen projected over the control yoke. The Andorian's usual sky-blue features were a darker cerulean shade, and that did not bode well. His gut sank as Johar opened the channel.
Commander?
Wheaton says Saru was on that shuttle, snapped Chethalo. He wasn't ordered to return to the Pelear ship. I need to speak to him right this second.
Ah.
Johar shot a look over his shoulder.
Sir, he just went below, down to the decks where the Gorlans are living.
And you let him? I didn't see any—
Never mind.
The first officer cut him off.
The lieutenant's actions are both uncharacteristic and unauthorized.
The Andorian leaned into the visual pickup, his face filling the small screen.
Find him and reel him back in before whatever misguided impulse he has surrendered to causes a diplomatic crisis.
5. The elevator platform rattled as it continued its descent into the heart of the massive freighter, and Saru quickly lost count of the levels as they flashed past. At his side, Vetch put down the crate he had been carrying and sat upon it, looking up at the lofty Kelpian.
"Why are you here, alien?"
His deep-set eyes fixed Saru with a distrustful glare.
"What you hope to grow?"
"I hope to understand you better," he said truthfully.
"Should go home,"
Vetch replied. The words were lazy, almost offhand, but Saru couldn't miss the warning buried beneath them.
"You get trouble."
"Yes, well." Saru frowned and pulled absently at his uniform. "I'm afraid that I've already generated enough of that." The lift rocked and began to slow. Vetch made a spitting noise and rose from the crate.
"Say not Vetch warned you."
The elevator shaft opened up for the last few meters, and Saru got a glimpse of another area of the cargo module interior as they came to a halt. Like the other spaces he had seen earlier, it was busy with makeshift dwellings remade from whatever was at hand, all built from surplus plating, suspended cables, and flexible materials. It was one more district in the contained but sprawling bivouac township. A group of Gorlans were waiting for them in a small court area near the loading apron in front of the platform, most of them dressed in clothes similar to Vetch's. Does that make them part of a subgroup, perhaps a tribe within the greater whole? Once again, Saru wished he had Burnham's eye for the study of alien cultures. With a few quick-fire grunts, too fast for Saru's universal translator to pick up, Vetch directed one of his kinsmen to take the other crate of medical supplies. He handed off his own to a second male wearing a yellow band around two of his biceps. "What does that mean?" Saru ventured the question, pointing toward the colored band. "Does it designate status or position in your society?" The Gorlan speaker gave him an odd look, and Saru guessed his translator hadn't clearly rendered the inquiry. Vetch walked away, and he seemed surprised when the Kelpian took a step after him.
"Where you go?"
He raised all four of his arms, palms flat. "I wish to speak to your people," said Saru. He had his tricorder set in constant scan mode again, recording everything going on around him, not just his interactions with Vetch, but the hushed conversations and furtive glances of the other Gorlans loitering nearby. They milled around, looking up at him and exchanging hushed comments. Saru was very likely the tallest being any of them had ever seen, at his full height, towering over even the Piliars with their elaborate headdresses.
"They not speak you."
Vetch made a dismissive gesture. Saru saw an opening and took it. "We can learn to. With this device." He showed him the universal translator. "I only require time to grow the knowledge." Vetch made a shaking motion like a shrug.
"Nothing for you here. Better back on Shenzhou."
"Respectfully, I would prefer to stay a while." The Gorlan repeated the shake shrug again.
"Choice yours."
He moved away, and Saru watched him cross the open atrium to a yurt-like enclosure, disappearing inside with the crates. As the entrance flap flicked open, he thought he saw figures inside with red bands on their arms. Then Saru realized he was alone again among these beings, once more surrounded by the aura of their anxieties and suspicions. Behind him, the elevator platform that had brought Saru here began its ascent back toward the upper tiers. "That settles it," he thought. "I am here. I have come this far.
I am going to do this. He regulated his breathing and opened his hands to present the most neutral, unthreatening aspect possible. Around the Kelpian, a ring of Gorlands was slowly gathering, all of them chattering and sizing him up. They stared at him with mistrust and interest in equal measure.
"Saru," said one of them.
He turned to see the speaker. It was a young Gorlan male, the patina of hair on his arms shaved into lines and dyed a dusty white. He rocked on his heels and grew bolder, saying the name again.
"Saru."
"Were you there before, in the gathering place?" Saru took a careful step toward the youth. "Yes, that is my name. I am Saru." He tapped his chest and then pointed at the Gorlan. "Who are you?"
"Naha."
The Gorlan eyed him, and Saru felt the prickle of a soft electrostatic aura emanating from the youth.
"Am Naha."
"Progress!" Saru shot a look at his tricorder. With every second that passed, the device was soaking up data like a sponge, incrementally improving the UT's ability to parse the Gorlan language and relaying it back to him. "A few days of this," he thought, "and we could have a complete lexicon." "I greet you in peace, Naha." Saru bowed slightly. "I wish to learn." His words sent a ripple of consternation through the group, and the aura became prickly and irregular. Saru took a deep breath and concentrated on evening out his own electrostatic energy, and that wasn't easy, given the racing of his own pulse. He was experiencing a peculiar mix of excitement and trepidation. "One mistake, and I will ruin any chance I have to make a connection with these beings." He took it slowly, recalling his academy classes on first contact protocols. Saru asked Naha leading questions based around simple concepts, and little by little, the Gorlan relaxed, supplying him with fragmented, monosyllabic answers. The problem was, the translator software was still struggling to keep up, so asking the youth to describe his planet of origin gave a reply of, "Land, sky, open, close, counting, remote, area." Saru sensed Naha's aura as it flickered and waned with each utterance. His jaw stiffened in frustration. Without being able to factor in the Gorlan's naturally generated EM fields into the communication methodology, there would be no way to machine translate their language fully and completely. "But I don't need to be able to craft a sonnet," Saru reminded himself. "I just need to be able to ask them one question. Are you in danger?"
"Are you friends with the Piliars?"
He waited for what he thought was the right opportunity, and then dropped the question into the mix. The prickle in the EM aura briefly became an itch that made Saru reflexively scratch the sensing spiracles on his temple, but the impression faded just as quickly. Naha toyed with a patch of discolored fur-like hair on his bare forearm and rolled his shoulders.
"You ask," said the Gorlan. "You know?"
"I don't understand," said Saru, and he felt the conversation starting to drift away from him. "What, why, seen, hurting, sleeping, curling, unless..." The translator momentarily lost the meaning of the exchange and spat out a string of seemingly random concepts. It was all on the verge of falling apart. Saru decided to reach for a shared experience as a way of keeping the tenuous connection he had made with the Gorlan youth. "Before, we were in the gathering place. There was a female of your kind there, dressed in robes of white." He indicated his own clothes, pulling at them with his long fingers. "I want to learn more about that..." Saru struggled to find the right word. "That ceremony." In an instant,
The motile, shifting resonance of the invisible aura faded away to nothing. It reminded Saru of a cloud passing in front of a sun, a pleasant warmth instantly becoming chills and shadow. That was a mistake, he told himself, watching as the body language of Naha and the other Gorlands became stiff and defensive. Did that question translate?